This is Fresh Air. People who are suffering with chronic pain are often told they'll just have to live with it. Jon Kabat-Zinn tries to help them learn how to live with it, and in the process, the pain is often reduced. Kabat-Zinn teaches meditation. In 1979, he founded the Stress Reduction Clinic at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, the first such clinic to be affiliated with a hospital. His patients are referred to him because of chronic pain or the stress of coping with illnesses such as heart disease or AIDS. He's also taught meditation to prisoners, priests, and Olympic athletes. In fact, he thinks everybody can benefit from learning this ancient practice. You may have seen him on the Bill Moyers series Healing and the Mind. Now he has a new book about meditation in everyday life called Wherever You Go, There You Are. A lot of people have preconceived notions about meditation, so I asked Kabat-Zinn to describe what he means by meditation.
Eyeballs tend to roll when the word meditation comes up, and people think that it's some kind of fantastic, mystical or magical thing that will put you into all sorts of weird or wonderful internal spaces that will, do wonderful things for you. But I try to sort of emphasize what is most fundamental about meditation and its universality, and that is that it's a particular kind of paying attention. And therefore, since we are all capable of paying attention, there's nothing particularly special or magical about meditation, and it's not really aimed to put you in some different kind of state. Its real aim is to help you be in touch with the place where you are now, or what you're feeling in the present moment, or what is going on in your mind or your body.
Tell us a little bit about the process of meditation that you teach.
Well, we teach a kind of meditation called mindfulness. And mindfulness is often spoken of as the heart or the core of Buddhist meditative practices, although the way we teach it in the hospital is not particularly Buddhist. Again, it's a universal approach to paying attention on purpose in the present moment. And there's one other element I left out, and that's that it asks you to be non-judgmental. So if you notice, for instance, that you're constantly judging, this is good and that's bad, or I like this or I don't like that, to try to let go of that and just experience things from moment to moment. So to practice mindfulness, basically, there are two aspects to it. One is what we call formal meditation, which would involve stopping for a moment or two and just tuning in to the present moment. And in formal meditation practice, you might do that sitting, or you might do it lying down, or you might do it standing, or even walking. All of those are opportunities to actually tune in to the bare actuality of what is going on in that moment, and to simplify it at first so that you don't get completely lost or carried away. You tend to focus on one object to begin with, to pay attention to one thing, and a very beautiful thing to pay attention to, which sounds a little weird until you start practicing this, is to just tune into your breathing, almost as if they were waves at the ocean. You know, there's a constant ebbing and flowing of the breath in and out of our bodies that goes on from the moment we're born to the moment we die. It turns out that if you become mindful of the feeling of the breath moving in and out of your body, that it can have a tremendously calming and also focusing effect on the mind and on the body.
So what do you do when the pain intrudes on that process?
I want to make it clear that we're not talking about something that's just for people with pain. This is really something that anybody could get some deep value from, simply in terms of becoming more in touch with their own experience. But whether it's pain or thoughts that come up in the mind or boredom or any other kind of state, what you do is you note it. You just observe that and you expand, if you will, the field of your awareness so that it can include those sensations or those thoughts or those feelings. And you just watch them without reacting to them as best you can. And then if you do react, then you watch that as well, and try not to judge it or say, well, I'm bad, I should have been on the breath, but my mind took me to my knee, which was hurting, or something like that. And you just let go of that and come back to the breath whenever you feel that you can bring your attention to stabilize on the breath once again.
One of the things you do when you have pain is complain. One of the things I do anyways, and one of the things I think most people do. Do you have to try to keep complaining to a minimum in the class?
You know, it's funny. You probably don't have a chronic pain condition, is my guess, because, yeah, when you're going through an acute pain thing, you tend to complain. But if you've been in pain for years, you find out that no one wants to hear about your complaints. And, and people don't even believe a lot of the time that it's as bad as it is. And so you tend to shut up and not talk about it. And so these classes are an opportunity for people to come in, and we will let people actually share what's going on in their lives. And we will spend the time, not just in the classes, but we see everybody individually as well. And if it takes an hour to listen to a person's story, we will listen to that person's story. But in the class, we're not doing that. We are basically training in the meditation and its applications to one's life over the weeks that you're in the course.
You teach meditation to people who have chronic pain. Have you ever been in that situation yourself?
Yes, I have. I've had a number of times when my back has gone out, and I've had to spend a few weeks at least going through that kind of thing, dealing with pain and experiencing it. And that's very helpful, of course, in developing empathy for people who live that way all the time. I'm also an athlete, and very often athletes inflict a certain amount of pain on themselves, and although you can, you know, reduce the pain just by stopping, the interesting thing is to experiment with the interface where you don't stop and you work with the pain mentally, and I, in fact, have trained athletes in that kind of thing.
So when your back goes out, do you meditate?
Well, that's the other thing about meditation. Of course I do, but I mentioned that there's a formal aspect of meditation. There's also an informal aspect, which is what we call mindfulness in everyday life, which is really what the book is about. And that is how to bring moment-to-moment awareness into every aspect of your life. So if my back goes out, then that's what I have to deal with at that moment. And if I can't go to work and I have to lie in bed, then I have to basically deal with that. So there are a lot of different ways of doing it. One is to be extremely reactive and angry and upset, and another is to bring awareness to those moments, what Thoreau called the bloom of the present moment. And you can discover that even within a situation that doesn't seem to be going your way for a while, that there's an extraordinary range of different kinds of feeling states and experiences and even joy that can be tasted within troubled times.
My guest is Jon Kabat-Zinn. He's the founder of the Stress Reduction Clinic at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center. He's also the author of the new book, Wherever You Go, There You Are, Mindfulness Meditation in Everyday Life. So we're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. We're back with Jon Kabat-Zinn. Now, you've also worked with prisoners, teaching them meditation. What was the context for that?
Well, the context for that is that most of the people in prison in the United States are in prison for drug-related crimes, including alcohol and addictions of various kinds. And if one thinks about prison from the point of view of rehabilitation as well as, you know, just punishment, the object is to have people leave the prison with a greater sense of control, impulse control, and familiarity with their own capabilities than they might have had going in. And so we working with the Department of Corrections in Massachusetts in seven different medium security prisons to train people who were going through a program in addictions control and so forth, in things like impulse control, violence reduction, relaxation, knowing how to, in fact, work with mental states when they come up so that they don't overwhelm you. And most crimes usually wind up being committed because people lose their minds. And we're teaching people something about how to find their minds and sustain that connection so that they don't harm themselves or other people.
Let me tell you something about myself, because I think in this respect, I'm probably typical of a fairly large group of people. I feel on an intellectual level, I really understand what meditation is about. Mm-hmm. On a more physical level, getting me to slow down and carve out a portion of the day in which I'm not thinking and I'm not working and I'm not taking care of things.
Right.
And just sitting there being non-judgmental
right.
and paying attention to my breathing. Boy, it's really hard for me to do that. My impulse is always, hey, you better get back to taking care of business.
Well, you know, that's one reason that we teach using tapes. We use guided meditation teaching tapes so that you'll have something to do, if you will, when you sit down to practice non-doing. So you plug in the tape and you just do what it says to do on one side of the tape, and that provides the guidance. And in a way, what that does is it establishes a sort of a discipline framework. And you get it under your belt by repetition, you know, say you practice every day. And then after a while, you don't need to do that with the tapes. I mean, it becomes sort of just a part and parcel of your own life. I think sometimes it's hard to convince yourself that you can have this whole intellectual idea, yeah, wouldn't that be great, and I run around too much, and especially if you're a media person or whatever, you know, the mind can be agitated almost all the time. And you think, well, in principle, I really need to slow down or stop a little bit. But then you've always got these deadlines or things that are preventing you from doing it.
Well, precisely.
Or you convince yourself in a way.
But I imagine you have that trouble, too. Let's face it.
Yeah, of course.
You're a busy, in-demand guy.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, very much so. And so the essence of this, from my own personal point of view, is that the reason I do this work is because I love to practice meditation myself. And in a way, my job and my meditation practice over time have really become the same thing. And but it requires a certain kind of discipline in order to develop the deeper aspects of this work. And if you hope to taste the sort of deep value of this, you have to, you know, really work at it. So I get up early in the morning and I carve out maybe an hour that's just for me, time for non-doing, and it's before anything has to be done. So basically, I can just set the tone of the entire day by practicing mindfulness for an hour by myself.
Now, does that hour come out of the time you otherwise might have spent sleeping?
It comes out of sleep. Yeah, it comes out of sleep.
So how many hours of sleep do you get a night?
I get maybe 6 hours of sleep or 5 hours of sleep, and I'm very happy to make the exchange of 1 hour of meditation for 1 hour of sleep.
You don't feel tired?
No. The meditation can be profoundly restorative in a way that carries out through the day, you know, so that it spills over and you accumulate a lot less tension during the day if you start out mindfully. And that can mean that you're not so exhausted all the time.
One of the things you try to do with meditation is to stop, or at least temporarily stop, all the chatter in your mind, all those thoughts that are colliding at one time. What's wrong with the chatter? Why try to quiet that?
Well, the chatter has a life of its own, and there's nothing wrong with it. That's just the way our minds are. But as we said when we started out, a lot of it has to do with the future and a lot of it has to do with the past. And the only thing that's wrong with it is that it just really can completely squeeze out the present. And then you're really not living your life anymore. You're living in your head. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Living
in your head,
nice,
yes.
Nice.
I know what you're saying.
But meditation, it's very important for you to understand that meditation is not about trying to silence the chatter. It's more like that's a common misunderstanding of meditation where someone would say, well, there's all this stuff going on in my mind, and if I were a really good meditator, then I would have nothing going on in my mind. I'd just be kind of like, you know, flatlined. That's not the case at all. If you try to shut off all of that energy in the mind, you're just going to get one hell of a headache. It's going to drive you nuts because that stuff is unbelievably powerful. So it would be like trying to take the surface of the ocean, which waves, of course, and to declare this ocean would be better if it didn't wave, so we'll put a big flat plexiglass plate over it and then we'll prevent it from waving. Well, lots of luck. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
so that you can be aware of the babbling of the mind, but not caught up in it. And that's what mindfulness is all about. Then some of that babble, it turns out, can be quite useful. No one's faulting thinking. But the question is thinking actually in the service of your life, or is it dominating your life to the point where you don't even know who you are or where you're going or what you're doing? And many times that, in fact, is the case. And that's why it's valuable to stop sometimes and just tune into the present moment and say, where am I going? What is happening here? Is this what I really want to be doing?
Jon Kabat-Zinn directs the Stress Reduction Clinic at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center. His new book is called Wherever You Go, There You Are. This is Fresh Air.